Bible Truth Transforms Lives. The Apostle Paul wrote, "The weapons of our warfare are not fleshly, but powerful by God for overturning strongly entrenched things." 2 Corinthians 10:4. Sometimes just one scripture can have a powerful effect, as was the case with a woman named Elfrida. After Elfrida was shown God's name in her Weddow language Bible, she consulted an encyclopedia, which confirmed what the Bible said about God's name. "Jehovah's Witnesses teach the truth," she thought. However, her husband Armitage wanted nothing to do with the Witnesses. He was a drunkard who chewed betel nut and smoked tobacco, and he had a foul temper. After retiring from his job in Lye, Armitage, along with Elfrida, moved to Ulitau in Milne Bay Province, where there were no Witnesses. Meanwhile, Elfrida subscribed to the Watchtower in Awake and studied by mail with Kayleen Nilsson, a pioneer. "Elfrida faithfully sent me her written answers every week," says Kayleen. Later, Gilead graduates Jordy and Joanne Ryle were assigned to Milne Bay, and they visited Elfrida to encourage her and work with her in the ministry. "Armitage asked me to study the Bible with him," recalls Jordy. "Because of his reputation, I wondered about his real motive. But after studying with him for a month, I knew he was sincere. Later, he was baptized and eventually became a ministerial servant. Now, three generations of his family are in the truth, and his grandson, Kagawala Biyama, quoted earlier, serves on the branch committee in Port Moresby." While pioneering in Hula, Don and Shirley Fielder started a Bible study with Alagi and Renagi Pala. "Alagi was a thief and was always fighting with others," writes Don. "He suffered from a tropical disease that gave his skin an unsightly appearance, and part of his mouth had been eaten away by a tropical ulcer. Both he and his wife also chewed betel nut, so the gaps between their blackened teeth were often blood red. Alagi was the last person one would expect to be drawn to the truth. Yet, he and his wife became interested in the truth and attended our meetings, sitting quietly at the back. Over a six-month period," recalls Don, "we saw a stunning transformation in Alagi. He stopped stealing, fighting, and arguing, and he and Renagi cleaned themselves up physically and started to participate in the meetings. They also began to share the good news with others. In fact, they and a handful of others became the first publishers in the Hula area." Abel Warwick lived on New Ireland and had suffered from leprosy. As a result, he had no feeling in his hands and feet. When first contacted with the truth, Abel could hardly walk and had lost interest in life. The truth, however, completely transformed his attitude and outlook, infusing him with renewed joy and vigor. In time, he even became a pioneer. To supplement his diet, Abel used to fish, but because his feet were numb, he could no longer walk on the reef. So the brothers bought him knee-high rubber boots. He also learned to ride a bicycle, which enabled him to travel farther with the good news. In fact, he sometimes pedaled 60 miles to follow up on interest, and on one occasion, he rode his bicycle 90 miles one way to invite an interested man to the memorial. At times, the knowledge of Jehovah has helped even those with beast-like traits to make great changes. Isaiah 11, 6 and 9. For example, in 1986, about 60 people from two villages near Bonds filed into a district convention at Lye and sat in the front rows. These Highlanders were traditional enemies who often fought one another. But after hearing the good news from special pioneers, they decided to live together in peace. Such experiences call to mind the words found at Zechariah 4:6. "Not by a military force, nor by power, but by my spirit," Jehovah of armies has said. That same spirit has also impelled many sincere people to conform to the Bible's moral standards. Honoring God's gift of marriage. In many lands, local custom as well as the churches of Christendom typically disregard the scriptural view of marriage. The situation is no different in Papua New Guinea. Thus, in order to please Jehovah, many couples living together out of wedlock or in a polygamous relationship have made major changes in their lives. Consider the example of Francis and his wife Christine. When Francis resigned from the army, he and his wife separated. Christine and their two children went back to her home village on Good Enough Island, Milne Bay Province, and he returned to Mount Hagen. There, Francis eventually took up living with another woman and her children. They attended the Assemblies of God Church. In time, Francis' partner was contacted by the Witnesses and started to study the Bible. Later, Francis took an interest too, and before long, both were attending Christian meetings. Francis wanted to become a Kingdom publisher, which meant that he had to resolve his marital situation. After giving the matter prayerful thought, he discussed it with his partner. She and her children then moved to another house, and Francis went to see Christine, from whom he had now been separated for 6 years. Understandably, Christine and her relatives were more than a little surprised to see Francis. Using the scriptures, Francis kindly explained to all of them his desire to do what is right in Jehovah's eyes. He then asked his wife to come back to Mount Hagen with their children and become a family again. All were amazed at this change of heart. Christine accepted her husband's invitation, and he, in turn, provided financial compensation to his wife's relatives for all they had done for his family over the previous 6 years. After Christine arrived back in Mount Hagen, she too began to study the Bible, which also meant learning to read. Meanwhile, she gave up chewing betel nut and smoking tobacco. This couple are now dedicated servants of Jehovah. The following is from pages 141 and 142 of the printed edition. Jehovah took me in. Dara Ningi, born 1977, baptized 1998. Profile: she learned the truth as a girl and was ostracized by her family. Later, she began pioneering and now serves at the branch office.
When I was 17 years of age, I found a copy of the book, You Can Live Forever in Paradise on Earth. I soon realized that I had found something very special. I associated the book with Jehovah's Witnesses because when I was about 4 years old, two witnesses spoke to me about God's promise of paradise on earth. Not long after I found the Live Forever book, my adoptive parents told me that since they had five children of their own, I had to return to my family, who lived in the coastal town of Wewak. When I first arrived there, I stayed with my father's brother. Eager to meet the witnesses, I found my way to the Kingdom Hall and arrived just as a brother was announcing the closing song. Nevertheless, a missionary from the United States named Pam arranged to study the Bible with me. I thoroughly enjoyed what I was learning, but after only three studies, I had a confrontation with my uncle. As I was nearing home after a Sunday meeting, I saw smoke ascending from my uncle's front yard. He was burning all my possessions, including my Bible study aids. When he saw me, he shouted, "If you want to worship with those people, then let them take care of you." Because I was no longer welcome there, I had no choice but to go to the home of my biological parents, who lived in a village about 2 hours by car from Wewak. When I approached my father, he said to my siblings in my hearing, "Who is this girl? We don't know her. We gave her away when she was three." I got the message that he did not want me either. So I left and stayed wherever I could. About 2 years later, two special pioneer brothers met me in my parents' village. I said to them, "Please tell Pam that I have not forgotten what she taught me, but I have no way to see her." Shortly thereafter, however, I was able to meet Pam in Wewak and resume my study. During that time, I stayed with three different families, but because of my association with the witnesses, I was kicked out of each house. Pam kindly made arrangements for me to live with a witness family in Wewak. I was baptized in 1998 and began regular pioneering in September 1999. I was invited to Bethel in 2000 and have the privilege of working with the Tok Pisin translation team. While my own family turned me away, which hurt me deeply, my spiritual family has more than made up for the loss. One of my favorite scriptures is Psalm 27:10, which reads, "In case my own father and my own mother did leave me, even Jehovah himself would take me up." Returning to the account.
Children who honor their Creator. By courageously adhering to their Bible-trained conscience, many children in Papua New Guinea have given a fine witness. For example, early in 1966, a primary school teacher told seven children of local witnesses that they would be expected to salute the flag during ceremonies to be conducted the following week. When the time arrived, in the presence of some 300 assembled students, all seven children refused to salute. As a result, they were expelled, even though their parents had requested in writing that their children be exempt from the ceremonies. An elder in the local congregation appealed the matter to government officials in both Papua New Guinea and Australia. On March 23rd, the Australian administrator of Papua New Guinea telephoned the school authorities, directing that the children be returned to school immediately. True Worship had won a small legal victory. Today, the Papua New Guinea government continues to respect the right of children to refrain from saluting the flag for reasons of conscience. Babes and sucklings can praise Jehovah in other ways too. Matthew 21:16. Consider the example of Naomi from the Highlands, whose parents, Joe and Helen, were not in the truth. When Naomi was about 3 years old, she stayed for about a year in Lae with Helen's sister, a zealous witness. The aunt regularly took Naomi out witnessing, often carrying her in a bag draped over her shoulder. Thus, Naomi became familiar with the kingdom hope, and all the more so because her aunt made good use of the illustrations in My Book of Bible Stories. When Naomi returned to her parents, she took a witness publication, stepped outside the house, and then knocked loudly on the door. "Come back inside," her parents called out. Stepping inside, the little girl said, "Hello, I am one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and I have come to talk to you about the Bible." As Joe and Helen looked on in surprise, Naomi continued, "The Bible says that paradise will come upon this land, and one King, Jesus, will rule over us. Everything we see around us is made by Jehovah." Joe and Helen were stunned. "What will the neighbors think?" Joe exclaimed to his wife. "Tomorrow you had better keep her locked inside the house." The following day, while her parents were sitting outside the home, Naomi knocked loudly on her bedroom wall. "Come outside," said Joe. Naomi emerged and launched into another presentation. "Hello, I am one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and I have come to preach to you. Good people will live forever on the earth, but people who get angry and do bad things will not be in paradise." Totally baffled, Helen burst into tears, while Joe stormed off to bed. That night, his curiosity piqued, Joe paged through his old King James Bible and chanced upon the name Jehovah. The following morning, instead of going to work, he wrote a letter to the witnesses and then drove 25 miles to Mount Hagen to leave it at the Kingdom Hall. The brothers went to Joe and Helen's home and arranged for a regular Bible study. They also taught Helen to read. Eventually, both Joe and Helen were baptized, and Helen was able to help other Bible students learn to read. All this because a little girl's heart overflowed with praise to Jehovah.